Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. When I think about recording an album these days, images of lots of headphones and individual musicians recording in his or her own small isolation booth spring to mind. There are usually lots of takes and overdubs to make for a nice, slick, perfect package. Well, that vision gets thrown out the window with my first guest today, Cripple Crunk. Cripple Crunk is the band and the name of their new album, recorded live in one room in a semicircle to recreate that feel of a jam session. Like a jam session, there were no opportunities for overdubs, and what you hear is what you get. Great spontaneous music making by some of the country's finest fiddlers, pickers, and cajonists. That's longtime drummer percussionist Bobby Martin, who plays the cajon, a Peruvian percussion instrument, on the album. The recording project was led by Winston-Salem-born banjo player Rex McGee, who composed and arranged the music. Rex is a real musician's musician whose reputation extends to fiddle and guitar as well. His playing and compositions have been featured on mandolinist Tony Williamson's Grammy-nominated Sessions at McBain Mill, and his tours with flat-picking guitarist legend Larry Keel and renowned Newgrass vocalist John Cowan led to collaborations with Vassar Clements and Tony Rice, among others. The friends who form Cripple Crunk share a love for traditional Appalachian string band music, but they also share a passion for a huge variety of styles. Many of those styles find their way onto the 13 tracks that make up their remarkable debut recording. You can hear these self-described extreme acoustic instrumentals live in concert in the comfortable confines of the Community Arts Cafe on Friday night, November 8th at 8 o'clock. Rex joined me recently along with bandmates guitarist John Garris and cajon player Bobby Martin. Rex, last we spoke, you told me a little about your connection with this great music, the string band music, and it goes way, way back.
There's a lot of family history. This is humorously referred to it as a family curse. I'm a fiddle player of many generations of McGee fiddle players, and my grandpa was a big influence in making me want to play the fiddle and this kind of music.
Just hearing him play, and you got the itch at what age was it?
I would have had my first violin lessons when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
But the violin lessons weren't what excited me as much as seeing him play the old-time fiddle. And so it probably took till my teenage years before I really gravitated towards his music and really digging in and learning old-time tunes on the fiddle.
Interesting. And Bobby, how about yourself? When did you get involved with percussion?
I was sort of a different case. I was raised in a bluegrass family, bluegrass music from both sides, mom and dad and the family.
Whereabouts, Bobby?
Originally from Salisbury, NC. Uh-huh. Live in Union Grove now. And it was really weird because I traveled a number of years on the road playing country and different things out west and up through Canada.
And drum set?
On a drum set. And then I came back to my roots, so to speak, and hooked up with some great musicians, acoustic musicians, and I made a turn towards that acoustic sound.
Well, I want to talk about that acoustic sound in the cajon in just a minute, but first I'm going to turn the mic over to John and get his, entree into this world. I mean, fine picker, and where did it all begin for you, John?
I mostly remember my grandparents playing guitar on my mom's side and some harmonica on my dad's side. Kind of funny, I had a bunch of harmonica players in the family. But
how about that?
Yeah, it's kind of different.
You all are invested in it, and this new album, I mean, it just blew me out of the water. Congratulations.
Thank
for
you.
Starters.
Thank
just
you.
Great tunes.
Thanks.
A lot of original music and just fantastic performances. And you keep that live sound, that kind of like in-the-moment sound, which I love so much. Huh. For the listeners not in the know, tell me about a cajon. What is
cajon?
It?
It's a Peruvian instrument. It's a wood box. It's got different tones that you can bring out and play. And you got your high end, where it would be like a snare, and then your low end would be like a kick,
yeah,
on a bass drum. And I do a lot of brushwork on the cajon instead of using my hands, because it allows me to get the tones that I want for acoustic music.
Well, and this project really was a perfect vehicle for that, because you all are set up to really capture that live jamming sound. Rex, talk about the dynamic at Mitch Easter's place there at the Fidelitorium, and what was that like for you all?
We had originally thought about recording this in my living room at home. I was working full-time as a pharmacist and was going to try to squeeze this thing in one weekend of being off. And he, Brent Lambert, immediately, recognized there would be some technical challenges with working in the living room. And he said, you know, you don't do that many things like this. It'll be your first solo release in 13 years. Why not pony up and go to a real studio somewhere? And I said, so he talked me into it. And Mitch's place was on the short list right away. So we went there, and it was a very nice, relaxed vibe. And Brent was very well set up with an impressive array of microphones. And their equipment was very much up to the task of allowing us to just sit around in one room, much like we would around a campfire. In this case, the campfire was the microphone array.
So. Love that. Yeah. Now that, without doing lots of punch-ins and whatnot, that must add a little pressure to the situation. But, I mean, you handled it well.
That's
but
right.
What was the scene like?
There were no punches. It was just we would do takes, much the way probably things were recorded in the 50s and 60s before a lot of multi-tracking at the end of the day, selected from the best of, you know, four or five takes that we had.
All right.
But I really worked these guys to death for those 2 days because we tracked 13 tunes, and you can do the math. You know, four or five takes for each one ends up being about 50-some takes that we amassed in 2 days of work. And
that's a long day.
I'm lucky to be alive after these guys were staring me down.
Well, right off the gate, you get a sense of the excitement of that process with first track on the album, Jesse's Jam Cakes. When you're playing in the studio like that, you're not in front of a campfire. Can you get yourself in that place like we're jamming?
Yeah, once the music starts, then you're there. You're in front of the campfire again. Many ways to approach recording, doing a recording project, and one might be the perfectionist approach where you're looking for everybody to get that perfect take. And frankly, you know, there are no perfect takes where everybody got every second of every song right on this album. You're going to be able to find, you know, misses, hits, and flubs here and there, but more of the focus was capturing that energy of spontaneity.
Yeah.
And the excitement of really playing the music, not just doing a clinical operation where you make sure everything's perfect.
Are they all originals?
Most of these are originals. Now, I will say some of them are more taken from traditional tunes. I think immediately of the song Cripple Creek, which, of course, we named Cripple Crump. We're trying to do it, trying to keep everything youthful and funny here.
Yeah,
so there's some traditional tunes that we just do some very stylized versions of. I wanted to cover a lot of the influence of a lot of different genres. As we typically did to keep ourselves entertained growing up playing with each other, we wouldn't, I guess, likes gravitate towards likes. And a lot of my friends that I made playing music were people like-minded that wanted to play other styles.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the track two. Just right, I mean, this one, talking about Crunkberry Blossom, you get some funky, crunky grooves on that bad boy. Who are some of your all's crossover influences? Because it really brings it into a different realm.
Yeah, that was an idea of reharmonizing an old fiddle tune. Really, the Crunkberry Blossom, it takes Blackberry Blossom, and we just I added some harmonies and slowed it down, and Bobby's got a funkier groove on the percussion. It's almost a shame for me to claim credit for arranging and composing a lot of this stuff. It's happened in so much as a group effort, but it got enormously complicated if I tried to be completely accurate.
The magic was there. The magic was there.
You could tell. How many times have you heard bands that have tried to be eclectic or tried to embrace different styles? It's seamless on this album. That's what I love it so much.
That's kind of the rule, is you just didn't want to stop that from happening.
Yeah, exactly.
That was kind of the goal, is to make sure that you just didn't step on the toes of the spontaneity part, you know.
Yeah.
And I think what helped that was probably Brent's idea of putting up the large array of mics and stuff like that, and then throwing that into the nice room mix when you're done.
Well, at the heart of it all are great performances, and I guess on this particular tune, talking about Crunkberry Blossom, I love Nate Leith's playing on this. The fiddle solos are, again, kind of in keeping with the whole project, just the variety of sounds he's getting in the thing.
Being a fiddle player myself, fiddle players are notoriously persnickety about other fiddle players, you know, as far as your taste of who you like and who you don't. But Nate really grew up with our school of playing, if there is such a thing, where you've got people that are versatile and able to cross over into different genres. And he was just an amazing prodigy as a young kid, winning Galax Fiddlers Convention when he was, what, like 10 years old?
I knew Nate when he was 7 and 8 years old, and he was a child prodigy then. And we became friends a long time ago.
And once he was old enough to stay up late and after midnight, you know, he learned all the bad habits that these guys do. And he really and went on to a Berklee School of Music there in Boston and became a well-trained musician. And he's probably the most literate of all the guys on the road.
That's funny you mentioned the Berklee thing. I didn't really. I'm hearing a little Tommy Gerald, and all of a sudden it's Stefan Grappelli, and all. This is the same, or John Blake. It's like the same guy. He's
totally the perfect guy for the project. Nate Leith is
fantastic,
amazing player.
Privilege working with him.
Love the title, Jig of Retribution, Rome Mountain Grown. And again, speaking of the variety in the album, what are some of the common threads that you need to get right? And you're talking about how persnickety you are as a fiddler, hiring a fiddler. Any of you guys can chime in on this. Yeah, you're doing a whole bunch of different styles of music, but what you got to get right to make it all work as a whole?
I can say when you sit down with quality musicians that were on this CD, the magic happens.
You could get technical about answering the question, saying that everybody plays with good tone and good timing and the appropriate taste for whatever genre we're in at the moment. But it's also, you could take any one of these genres, and maybe a purist within that genre would say something's a little strange about the way these guys are doing it. But by the time you mix them all together, it's sort of its own sound. And
either
you like it or you don't. But
Jig of Retribution is a great tune, and I love the switch in tempo. That up-tempo
jig-do-a-reel, so that always is a cheat trick that works.
I mean, we're locking the tempo with you there, Bobby, where it shifts into the jig?
Yes.
The reel, from the jig to the reel?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's what I'm talking about. We were, to myself, I was reading off of these guys, you know, because, I mean, the tempos and the changes, it was a good tune to work with.
I mean, the music's great, the compositions are great, and the titles are great. Can we go back to the letter K and Cripple Crunk?
There we go.
Great tune. And these are all, again, so many of these originals or you know, arrangements by Rex. I love the combination of just the seriousness in terms of the musicality, the you know, the musicianship in this, but there's always lightheartedness in it, and it comes across in this tune. You don't hear trading twos that often in bluegrass, and you get it on this tune. Speak to that, the humor element in some of these things.
Danny is quite a humorous fellow, the mandolin guy. My partner Danny nicely goes back to, gosh, us getting in all kinds of musical mischief up at Galax when we were teenagers.
Okay.
And Danny lives in Northern Virginia, and he is a band leader in his own right. He's traveled the world and involved with many different projects. And, yeah, he's a funny guy as well, and so it can't help but come out I really think this idea of, like you say, trading twos might have came out of a jam session at Galax a couple years ago where we, sometimes you're not in the mood to play Cripple Creek like wide open fast. Instead, you want to just play a little funky version of it. And so
we can sit
here and have a musical conversation, back and forth between two or three of us.
Well, let's hear some of that. It's the perfect ending. I mean, I laughed out loud. My office mate just said, "David, are you okay?" I mean,
the Bo Diddley ending, right?
You got to have that. That's awesome. All right. And that's a Cripple Crunk. That's the title cut, as they say. Cripple Crunk, 13 doses of instrumental musical medicine. I love it. There's one tune that on the album that's got a slow groove on it, and it was real bluesy, talking about TNBABCB. What is that, T?
That is an acronym.
I had a
feeling. You know what an acronym that is?
Can we say this on NPR radio?
You can absolutely. Yeah, it's not anything you might would think it would be. It is, there'll never be another Brown County Breakdown, which Brown County Breakdown is a famous Bill Monroe tune that's usually done a lot quicker. It's a breakdown.
Oh,
so we slowed it up and paired it with the great There'll Never Be Another You jazz classic. So we took the changes from a jazz tune and took the melody head from a bluegrass tune, slowed it down, and it's this obscure. And this, I think, was Danny's brainchild, actually. I might have changed his arrangement a little bit, but just one of those freaks of nature.
A lot of fun playing everything with everybody. It's tough when you're dealing with health issues sometimes, but at the same time, when you get around music like that, it just carries you right through.
Music's the best medicine.
It is.
There it is. And Rex, I can't let you off the hook on that one, because I could have sworn I was, and this is for early on in the playing here, I thought, God, what does this remind? Is it Earl Klug? Is it George Benson? And all of a sudden, you came in with some scat singing on
there
that solo.
Yeah, that's, you just have to feel that sort of thing. You can't plan that moment. See, I thought that was going to be an outtake for sure and that nobody would have used it. But at the end of the day, again, humor wins. So.
Oh, I don't think Bella Fleck tried that out yet. That's awesome. That's innovative.
He's a smarter man than
me. Oh, come on.
Not always evident to everybody that there's a tune in every key, so there's a little nod to Bach there. If you start, the first tune is in G, and they go all the way up through G sharp, so in chromatic order. So there's a technical detail that's...
A little well-tempered crunk?
A little bit of well-tempered crunk going on.
But hiding some of these things. You can't tell everybody all the secrets.
Yeah, I got it. Well, nobody had ever figured it out otherwise. But then you get to the last tune, and that last tune actually modulates through all 12 keys in that one tune, and it also summarizes a lot of the styles we did in the rest of the tunes on the album. So you've got the melody to a traditional fiddle tune called Did You Ever See the Devil, Uncle Joe, which comes from the Irish repertoire of Miss McLeod's Reel. And we just modulate initially every 32 bars, and then it starts shrinking down near the end where we're modulating every 16 bars and every 18 bars. And so we cover all the keys, and we do it in different styles as we pass through. We play it more bluegrassy, old-timey, Irishy, swing, Cajun, a little R&B. So it's the last tune summarizes the project.
Cripple Crunk is Rex McGee on banjo, John Garris guitar, Danny Nicely mandolin, Nate Leith fiddle, Dennis Lee bass, and Bobby Martin on cajon. My thanks to Bobby, John, and Rex who joined me today. You can hear them live in all their acoustic splendor in the wonderful, intimate setting of the Community Arts Cafe in Winston-Salem, where you can actually hear all the instruments and not leave the concert with your ears ringing. Their performance is Friday night, November 8th at 8 o'clock, and you'll find links to ticket information and more at WFDD.org. Just be sure and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and when we come back from this short break, it's Mary Siebert and two talented young actors from the Arts-Based School in Winston-Salem. They've got stories to tell, lessons to learn, and a heartwarming song from the opera Brundabar, which they'll share with us live next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.